Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast from the International Motorsports Association and Radio Show Limited.
It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Sounds of race cars at Sebring International Raceway take us under 5 hours to go in the race. Beautiful evening, like really soft. Still one or two clouds off in the distance, Jeremy Shaw, but this is a lovely time of day to go motor racing. Just coming up to 12 minutes past 5 Central Florida time. Looks an absolute picture at the moment.
It does, doesn't it? It's just a glorious time here. It's always a great race here. It's always a great racetrack. And where the weather's like this, it just looks fantastic as well. Just some great scenery out there. And some great racing going on as well, and still some fast laps being turned. Lawson Aschenbach has just turned the fastest lap in GT Daytona in car number 74. That's a Riley Motorsports Mercedes. He's running fourth in the class now. The situation has kind of settled itself out after this round of pit stops, and it's now Madison Snow back in the lead of the class in car number 48. He's on a slightly different strategy. He stopped quite a long time ago, so he's kind of halfway through a stint in that number 48 car. But he leads from the number 16, number 63, then number 74, Lars von Aschenbach, like I talked about, then Roman De Angelis in the number 23 Aston Martin, with Matt McMurray right behind him.
If I want to actually be heard by the rest of the world and not just in my head, I actually need to open my microphone here in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Excuse me. Thank you, Jeremy. Shea Adam has been looking at the Earl Bamber question. This is like the Central Lothian question, I think, in British politics. Will he get close to doing 4 hours, more than 4 hours, in six between the 9:11 and the 9:12? Shea, you've got the spreadsheet.
The easiest way to figure it out is to figure out when he got out of one car and when he got in another, and if there was a more than 2 hour window between the two, which would ensure that there could not be a 4 hour period in any six. The answer is yes, there was a 2 hour and 13 minute window from where he got out of the 9:11, where he led the race, the 9:12, where he also led the race.
In theory, he could do 4 hours pretty much back to back, but then he'd have to sit out. He would have had to sit out for 2 hours either side of that.
Correct.
So, question here from Elliot Mason, who's been on fire today at IMSA Radio, as in comes Nicky Katzberg from the lead in Corvette. That's spot on time for him as well, I think. Where's he gone? Yep, 29. That's at the end of his 30th lap, but there was a couple at the beginning of that stint that were behind the safety car, just over an hour. So yeah, I'm quite happy with that. Can you remember the last time that a driver led a class in two different cars? Earl's leading in the 9:12, has led in the 9:12, and Chris Humphrey said, "I'm not being silly. I must have missed the announcement that he's driving both cars." That was, Chris, just basically down to the fact that they were running out of Porsche Works drivers. Remember, they brought Neil Janney in, who is not normally a GT driver. He is normally a prototype, or has been in the past a prototype driver, but has been doing some GT work for Porsche. But Earl doing double duty, or duty across both of the teams, but of course had to, as Shea said, abide by the regulations for drive time, maximum drive time four in any six, and that was planned by Porsche GT North America. But the one I can't answer, Shea, and I'm not sure, I'll put it out there at IMSA Radio, when was the last time a driver led the class in two different cars? I remember...
I can tell you the last time the driver stood on the podium in two different cars in the same class, and that was here at Sebring International Raceway in 2012 or 13. No, it would have been 12, when Jonathan Summerton was driving both of the factory BMWs with Team RLL, and he finished first and third, I want to say, in that race.
And I can tell you that I saw Bill Oberlin lead for BMW in two different classes way back in 2019, the first time I came to the States, 1997, 98 for Petit Le Mans, and he led in a GT car and in a prototype at WeatherTech Raceway Road, WeatherTech Raceway as it is now, Laguna Seca. But I don't think he finished either of those, but he did lead two classes. I couldn't tell you. It might have happened when you've been swapping people around. Should just point out, by the way, to Chris Humphries and everybody else, this is not COVID related that Earl's doing double duty. It's just that we've had WEC this weekend, so Matthew Jaminet, who would normally have been involved as one of the endurance drivers here, he was on duty. We've got all the usual WEC drivers also busy doing that as well. And there's a 1,000-kilometre race at Paul Ricard in the south of France at Le Castellet tomorrow for the end of the season in the SRO European Championship as well. So it is basically just a very busy week. Fixture congestion is the way to put it, I think. And Porsche battling at the moment down at turn seven. Actually not, because that number four, Tom Milner car, although he's back in line on the timing screen with all the other GT Le Mans cars, he is still four laps away from actually having a battle. Now, keeping an eye on all that is going on out on the circuit as the light begins to fade. Hello to Justin Henderson, three generation of his family watching Sebring and listening to us here on IMSA Radio. This is what it's all about. Sebring is still Sebring, even in November. And Corvette shirts as well there. Grandad, dad and grandson there in the Henderson household. Brilliant stuff. Justin, thank you for sending us that. It's great that we've been able to bring you this racing, and well done to IMSA for getting it on this year. A little slice of normality in the madness that has been 2020. Under 5 hours to go now, and now 6 seconds at the front of the field. Bourdais seems to have weathered the storm at the front of the field. Ollie Platt been putting some good times in and just took half a second the last couple of laps, Jeremy, out of the lead of Bourdais. But the two Mazdas at the moment seem to be ploughing their own furrows. 14 seconds between them, and the best of them 6 seconds away from the leader.
Yeah, and it's interesting how they've sort of, the fortunes have kind of ebbed and flowed between those two, because one sometimes it's 55 ahead of the number 77, sometimes it's the other way around. Now it's in the favour of number 77 car by 14 seconds, which is pretty about as much as been separated by pretty much all the way through this race. And in fact, Olivier Plat has been pulling away from Jonathan Bomarito, because the gap was about 7 seconds, maybe 15 laps ago after the pit stop. So we'll be getting ready now. I would expect to see the leaders back into the pits, probably the 55 car, I imagine, will probably be the first one in, either this time or next time.
Out goes the delayed number four Corvette. Tom Milner brought it in. Goes through the RFID chips at the end of the pit lane and rejoins into the pit lane for the number 48. That is the Lamborghini of Paul Miller Racing Share. Are you happy with that? Is that on time? Let me scroll down into the green at the bottom. There's only 16 laps that time, so that's only 35 minutes, so that was a bit early.
But this time it's planned. They're trying to go for the Michelin Endurance Cup yet again.
Oh, yes,
Singleton,
of course,
from Madison Snow, and now they're handing over to Brian Sellers. 50 minutes until the points are awarded. They only need to be in the top three to clinch it. And they have close to an hour worth of a fuel tank, so they're hoping that the pit cycle will work out for them this time. But that was planned. Into the pit lane also came Jonathan Bomarito in the 55 Mazda. And Jonathan has been dealing with this long brake pedal that the whole team has been contending with the entirety of the race so far. But when I asked Harry Tinkle about it, he said, yeah, Ryan talked about it on the radio. Jonathan's talked about it on the radio. Both have said it's terminal, and yet we're still out there. So, hey, keep going, 55 Mazda. Keep going. Harry Tinkle now behind the wheel.
Bump drafting down through Big Bend and into turn seven. The 25 BMW on the rear bumper of Nick Tandy is their battle for second place, and he's there again. Jinx to the right hand side, gets the nose of the red BMW ahead, but he's on the wrong side as they turn through turn number 10. And just ahead of them is the lead car in class, Jesse Kron, the other BMW, the black one, and the big red BMW M6 moving around behind. Beautiful looking sunset this evening off to the west of Sebring International Raceway as the infield lights now come on, but they're not shining on the track. Very few lit portions, and when this gets dark here, it gets very dark. Still about just over 15 minutes to official sunset, but it's getting into the gloaming at the very least here. We're on the Ullman straight with first, second and third. Tandy goes early to the left-hand side, and then a huge move down the inside by the BMW. That was an awesome manoeuvre. Drifted across to the left and had Tandy cover and then swapped through to the inside. And a big bounce in the middle of the corner from the BMW, which I think has held on as they go to... No, Tandy's gone back through into turn one. As there was a prototype in the pit lane, which I'll get to in a moment with Shea. Thank you. Get to that in a moment as this battle rages on. Tristan Vautier already been put into the number five car, so Seabass out and Vautier in. New set of tyres there as well. That means Ollie Plart will lead for Mazda. So the 55 must have pitted as well there, Shea, did it?
Yes, it did. That was Jonathan Mamarito brought it in, and Harry Tinkle took it back out.
Thank you, Shea. Cracking battle. Really nice manoeuvre from Conor DeFilippi. Went to the left, jinked to the right, gets into turn 17 ahead. Ooh, he might have got a little bump and run there from the man who started his career on short ovals, Nick Tandy. And then got up the inside at the exit of turn 17 and reclaimed the place. I have a feeling this is not over yet, Jeremy Shaw, between these two. And Conor DeFilippi goes round the outside through the Jean Dubiane bench. That's not an overtaking manoeuvre, unless somebody's got a problem. But Nick Tandy doesn't have a problem. Well, actually, he does. The problem is that Conor DeFilippi's just driven round the outside when he wasn't expecting it. Filippi really making his intentions felt. Little flash the headlights from Nick Tandy. I think that's as much to say. Aye, righto. I was enjoying that as well. That was amazing. Two cracking overtaking manoeuvres by Conor DeFilippi. One very good one by Nick Tandy, but that leaves Tandy down to third from second, and Conor DeFilippi up to second. It's a BMW 1-2 in GT Le Mans.
Great stuff. Just tremendous driving going on out there at the moment, isn't it? It's so exciting. And pit stops there for the top three cars in the last couple of laps. The number 77 car led a couple of laps there. Tristan Nunez is now going to take over from Olivier Pla. The number 31 car also into the pits. I think that's Felipe Nasser taking over from Kevin Chavez. No, sorry, he was already in the last one, wasn't he? So he just stays in. Yeah, Nasser stays in. So that's in the meantime, number five car has handed over to Vautier. So French tag team, we'll have to see where they come through next time around. So he's back up to speed now out of the pit lane.
Mazda ahead of the recovering number seven. That's what confused me there. So Nunez and Nasser out of the pit lane for Mazda and Whelan, 77 and 31. Jesse Kron leads in GT Le Mans from Conor DeFilippi's teammate from Porsche. From Porsche GTD, Pat Long is back in front for Wright Motorsports. From in second, Alessandro Balzan for Ferrari and Scuderia Corsa, the 63 car. Then Lawson Aschenbach, the Riley 74 Mercedes, back up into third ahead of Roman De Angelis in fourth, 10 seconds further back. Nice, like it, looking good. Headlights on. Headlights beginning to have an effect, Jeremy. You can just see that the light is beginning to drop when we look at our monitors. Such is the technology of the cameras nowadays, it actually looks a bit brighter than it actually is. A little bit earlier on, Alan Prosser was asking about the legality of running with only one tail light, which is the Mustang sampling number five, actually, going down into the hairpin at turn seven. It's missing its left rear tail light. Shea Adam has the answer.
Sorry, I didn't type it back to you, Alan, but it's kind of a long explanation. If you start the race with two functioning headlights and two functioning taillights and some damage occurs on track to one or the other, you may continue without needing to repair that. If there's damage that happens to both taillights or both headlights, then you have to come into the pit lane to fix it. But the number five, for example, the Mustang sampling Cadillac, which is running with only its right rear taillight functioning, that's perfectly legal.
You're running a bit of a risk, though, Shea, aren't you, at that point? Because if you get a dink on the back end or a bit of rubber gets thrown up from the rear wheels or it just stops working, you would have to come in immediately. Whereas as it stands at the moment, they could replace that whole tail section when they've got a pit stop going anyway or if there was another full course caution. But if that other light goes out, then they have to come in immediately. And that could be an additional pit stop, which would cost them dearly.
Correct. And as it is right now, they're leading the race. If, for example, I don't know, it's Sebring, it's bumpy. If a wire came loose and that taillight stopped working, you have to pit from the lead of the race. No excuses, no ifs, and or buts.
It's a reason why a number of GT cars have multiple lights within the light units. You don't blow bulbs nowadays, they're all pretty much LEDs. But if you get a broken lamp unit and it takes out part of it, the rest will still work. And that's very smart indeed. Lighting has changed so much in the last few years. And anybody that thinks that the LED headlights are a bit of a gimmick on road cars, well, I can tell you on race cars, having driven cars with very efficient, normal filament bulbs, with halogen bulbs, with projector headlights on darkened race tracks, and then you turn the LEDs on. Oh my goodness. Absolutely, literally day and night. So, just a few moments ago, new second place for Conor De Filippi. It was a cracking overtaking manoeuvre in GTLM as he went into turn 17. There was a little bit of contact from Nick Tandy right in the middle of the corner that bumped them both offline. Tandy able to tighten the Porsche through. I didn't see that being looked at, so I'm pretty certain that that's not going to attract any attention from race control. But subsequently on the next lap around, Conor De Filippi went round the outside anyway. And managed to regain the position. So, just moving down towards, what have we got to go? 4 hours and 40 minutes, Jeremy. And looking forward to this run to the flag. What do we reckon? At least a couple of hours more darkness, I think, than we would have had normally. Actually, hold that thought as we can go to Shea Adam, who's got a guest for us in this VP Racing Pit and Paddock Report. Shea, who have you got?
Hello, Christina Nielsen. I'm so sorry that you're not out on track right now in all of this fun GTV battling. But as a former Sebring 12-hour winner, how much fun is it to sit back and watch all this going on, just with even popcorn?
Hey, guys, it's great to talk to you. Of course, as a driver, I want to be driving, but it's a lot of good battles going on at the moment. I mean, with all the yellows all the time, crunching up the field. I mean, it's good action, definitely. I'm enjoying this one, I have to say.
How hard is it to sit back and watch this track, knowing that it's kind of different from any other time that you've been on it since we're in winter?
Yeah, it's kind of strange. It's getting cold here. Normally, you know, it's been a busy year and you want to relax, but right now, I'm ready to get going. So it would be really cool to, you know, to get some opportunities for 2020, and, you know, we're working on it. Yeah, I mean, right now my last memory of sitting in a race car was one that was burning. So, you know, I would like to change that, with that being my last memory of being in a race car in IMSA.
How is 2021 looking for you? And does it look like you might be back with the girl team again? Really enjoy you and Kat racing together.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the cool thing about this is that Catherine and I have really been, getting super close, working on this together. So, you know, we're exploring what options that are out there, always open for new ones. And, you know, nothing I can share right now, but I'll put it, it's still in the works.
So, good chance you'll be back at Sebring next March? Please say yes.
I would very much like to say yes. My heart is saying yes. My head, the logic is saying, I don't want to jinx anything, but I'm definitely crossing fingers. Would be great to be back with you guys.
Christina, it's Hindhoff here in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Great to hear your voice, and thanks for adding to our audience numbers. How difficult is it to make any plans even now for 2021 with travel restrictions changing seemingly weekly or monthly? Is it difficult for you to look at getting on a transatlantic plane, or, you know, do you have to look more towards Europe potentially for your racing?
I mean, am I in a race car? I'm happy, but my favorite place is definitely IMSA. I love all the American circuits. I love the American atmosphere. You know, tracks like Sebring, you don't come across everywhere. And I think, you know, you're watching drivers right now that are coming in from Europe. And I think one of the main reasons is because IMSA have done such a good job taking care of us and making sure that, you know, we can go racing.
In terms of racing profile, we know going motor racing takes money for teams, for drivers, everybody, you know, it's difficult. I mean, is it going to be even more difficult in 2021 to get potential corporate sponsors and people interested in going because everybody's having to look at their budgets?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's never been easy with the racing part, but, because it is an expensive sport and right now the future is uncertain, but I also think that, you know, the companies have now had the year to navigate through this new landscape. It's still a work in the progress, but I think companies are further ahead, and I think everyone would like to plan for the future. Just because if we stop doing that, then, you know, what fun is left?
Well, I'm not going to disagree with that. It's Diwali this weekend, which is the festival of light and of hope, and I'm taking a lot from that at the moment. Looking at the battles in the field, Christina, particularly in GT Daytona, you know quite a lot of these drivers, you know all the teams as well. We've got Pat Long leading for Wright at the moment, ahead of Riley, of Scuderia Corsa, your old mate Balzan in third position, Hartner Racing, Hardpoint. All of these teams know how to win. Now, I think I know where your heart would be on this, but where's your head? Where do you think this race is going? Who do you think's got the advantage, if indeed there is an advantage right now?
I mean, I will say, I've both been with the Ferrari and the Porsche. I think both cars come alive when the sun goes down, and I think especially the Porsche does that. And we used to always say, you know, you just got to let it come to you and survive the first basically 7 hours. 8 hours of the race, and I think they're going to be really strong. But if I'm choosing any team out of the whole bunch, I think I would be kind of cheering for the DTLM guys, the Porsche guys, just because, you know, it's their final race, and I think it's sad to see them go, and if they could finish out on a high note, I think that would be really special.
Could have missed the sound of that flat six screaming away around the circuits, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, very much. But luckily, they're still going to be pressing in GTD, and I think that's really important. And I think what they're doing with the Cup cars and getting the Carrera Cup, I think that's creating a really nice ladder that's also benefiting IMSA and the American race market.
Yeah, Carrera Cup North America next year. That's a big step forward onto Michelin's, the new 992 Cup car. You know Carrera Cup racing very, very well indeed. It puts the American series on the same footing as everywhere else in the world, and the young drivers that go forward to the shootout will have been racing on the same tyres as everybody else for the preceding season. That's a very important step forward.
Yeah, 100% agree, but I also think, I mean, my first season in America was racing in the Carrera Cup Challenge. It gave me an opportunity to get to know the championship, to get to know the tracks while I was doing only the long races as well. And I think, you know, that combination of getting ready and not only having a ladder within Porsche that they're building themselves, but also building a ladder within IMSA and the different categories that are available. Because I do think the Cup car is not an easy car to drive. And I think it's a nice preparation tool for preparing yourself to go into something like GTD in the future.
Christina, it's great to hear your voice. I miss having a morning chat with my coffee with you in Marion's when we're at the racetrack. Will you give our very, very best to the family and please take care of yourself, won't you?
I will do. I can't hug any of you guys, and even if I was there, I couldn't. So I'm sending virtual hugs. Thank you so much, you guys, for having me.
Thanks, Christina.
Christina Nielsen joining us live here on IMSA Radio. IMSA champion, of course, in former years, and we'd really like to see her back racing. Sounded in good form there, Jeremy Shaw. Christina Nielsen, what a career she's had in the IMSA GT classes.
Yeah, indeed, she did sound good, didn't she? And super enthusiastic there, and great interview. That was really fun to hear from Christina, and nice of her to take the trouble to call in. But we certainly hope to see her back again, and Catherine too. There was a bit of news on Catherine Legg this week, wasn't there? She put out a couple of messages on the social media saying the recovery is going really, really well. She said she could probably have been fit enough to drive here if it had been in the cards. But she's building towards next year, as is Christina. We hope to see both of those two back in 2021.
They built a good relationship. And, of course, what she was talking about there in terms of the last time she was at IMSA was at Daytona in a flaming GT car. And I can understand her not wanting that to be the last memory. I would like that to be a memory full stop, Jeremy, to be honest.
No, indeed. No, that would be something she would look back upon fondly. It's always good to have all sorts of different experiences in race cars, but that is certainly not one of them.
No, that one you can miss. I've only once had an engine fire in a race car that I was driving. I could see it coming out the bonnet in front of me in an Aston Martin. Managed to get it blown out, thank goodness, but it's not a pleasant feeling. And I have to say, Christina did a cracking job with that car when it did burst into flames on the high banks. 4.5 hours to go. This is IMSA Radio, Sebring International Raceway live. The annual Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring, 68th time this great race has been run. Shea Adam, our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter, with Jeremy Shaw and me, John Hindhoff, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Let's go back down to Shea and. We were watching the 31 pit stop times. Philippe Nasr in the Whelan Engineering Cadillac at the moment in fifth position. 28 seconds off the lead here. What have you been able to glean from your contacts in the pit and paddock?
Well, many thanks to Chris Mitchum, who's got a million things on his plate, but he still takes the time to write me back. So I really do appreciate that. The slow pit stop, when everyone else jumped them in the pit stop, it was a slightly botched driver change that threw them off a little bit. But more importantly, they needed to take more fuel than everyone else. So we did get that right. Yay, victory dance over
dance.
Here.
I'm doing the dance.
But don't do the dad dance. Don't do dad dancing. You'll hurt yourself. Dad dancing does hurt kids, by the way. But as far as that car is concerned, it's Pipo and Felipe to the end of this race. So,
you've got that
they're
bit
not
right.
Going to be in fifth for long.
Okay, well, you've got that bit right. So you can do the victory dance for that one. Oh, brilliant stuff then. And thanks again to all the teams for passing that information. We've had to find new ways of working this year, particularly with Shea at our VP Racing Field Pit and Paddock reports. Well done to everybody for passing it through. Chris Humphreys thanks Porsche for an endurance fan this weekend. Both fun and super busy. Yeah, they're running out of drivers. Absolutely brilliant stuff already. Spot on 4.5 hours to go, Jeremy. So we're getting down towards the last third of this race. The colours are deepening in the sky. And now this is when you want your car to start to perform.
Indeed so. And the number five car with, first of all, Sebastian Bourdais and more recently Tristan Vautier, really doing a good job. Last time around for Vautier, a 148.7. He's another guy who doesn't have particularly fond memories of this place, of course, either, does he? Because he crashed the Spirit of Daytona car pretty heavily coming off turn 17 quite a few years ago now. But he's put that all behind him. And he's the lead between the Tristan Vautier and Tristan Nunez in number 77 car, staying pretty constant, around about 8 seconds, give or take. But both of those two edging away from Simon Pagenaud in third position in car number six. Then the gap back to Harry Ticknell is staying pretty constant. It's around about 10 seconds at the moment. Back to number 55 car. And number 31 of Felipe Nasr has been closing the gap to Harry Ticknell. It's now only a second and a half between those two. Number 85 car has just been into the pits. And Scott Andrews has handed over that car to Stephen Simpson.
Love this time of night at Sebring. Sunset at Sebring, oh, so evocative. Hello to Sarah Rigby, who enjoyed that Christina Nielsen interview as well. 99.1 FM around the circuit, Sirius 202, XM 217, RS2 around the world, and in sound and vision, of course, for those of you outside the US. Another pit stop for at the front of the field. Renger van der Zander has passed the Konica Minolta Cadillac back to his teammate Ryan Briscoe. They are only now two laps, Jeremy, ahead of the car that they were just 2 points behind coming into the championship. It's been a good run from the Acura, but their problems earlier on with that intercooler, they've actually made back 4 laps on the leader. And unfortunately, it hasn't fallen quite that way for the number 10 car. And they actually have not been able to make back any of the 5 laps that they dropped when they had that incident with the 77 car.
No, and yeah, the main reason for that is they haven't really been, I don't think there's been any full course cautions since that incident. Have they? So they
Well, certainly haven't been in the right place in their pit stop cycle to take the best of it. It's certainly that, yeah.
Yeah. So the gap between those two, as you say, is staying right there and is likely to remain so until something else happens. Yeah. And that's certainly going to put the ball into the court of the number 31 car. If they can pull off a victory, you know, it's still anybody's game in this championship, no question about it. Yeah. Right now, it's not. It would still go.
Yeah, we've still got the 7 car right now, wouldn't it?
Number 7 car, yeah, by a single point, I think.
They've said all the way through these IMSA seasons that the odd point here and there can make such a big difference. The 7 car into the pits for its reciprocal pit stop to the one that the number 10 Cadillac just made. So they'll go back to 8 laps off the lead. But of course, we're waiting for Tristan Vautier to make his next stop as well. He's got he's about two-thirds of the way through, just less than that. His fuel burn, 12 laps out of somewhere near 20 is what the prototypes get. Round about just under 40 minutes out on the circuit. Tristan Nunez in second place in the 77 Mazda. He's 11 laps into his run. It'll be Simon Pagenaud who pits first out of the top three, the number six Acura. He's 18 laps. In fact, he's about to complete his 19th lap. Harry Ticknell in the 55 Mazda. Tim Masters got really split up there in that last run. As you said, Jeremy, they were pretty much together. And then the 77 seemed to get the advantage. Harry Tinknell's been out. It's his 14th lap out of the pit. Felipe Nasr now already been out 11 laps in the 31 car. This is coming to the end of his 12th. So that's, 20 minutes or thereabouts. So that's how the fuel is at the front of the field. And with four and a bit hours to go, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that once we get for the teams, and just harking back again, Jeremy, to our Porsche keys to the race, we're 25 minutes away from another chunk of points in the Michelin Endurance Cup. Once that's out of the way, and in fact probably factoring into the calculations now for for all the teams, is grab your points for that, but also you're looking already to the end of the race, because that's what these teams are doing nowadays. Back timing from the end of the race.
Yeah, that's exactly right, John. They are. It's a very carefully orchestrated plan all the way through the race, and you might get thrown various curveballs here and there, but there's always a plan B. There's always another option that you can pursue to try and get yourself back where you need to be. I think we're going to see the number. We saw Elio Castroneves there, did we not, Hank? Was that Castroneves on the pit wall? I think it was, wasn't it?
Right.
I'm confused.
Rossi's in the car.
I think he just took the wheel of the car, didn't he?
Yeah, but that
they just made a pit stop a couple of laps ago, number seven car.
Yeah, it was definitely Rossi that got into the car, but I think Elio is wearing Rossi's spare helmet. Because I think that was Elio sitting on the wall.
Wearing his helmet.
Get back in the car.
Yeah, why? Yeah, that's a good. Sorry, that's a good point. They've just changed. Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Well, Elio's just sort of, he has
maybe he's not just got out of his gear yet. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Oh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was Helio's helmet, because it's definitely Rossi in the car, because I saw an onboard, and that was definitely Alexander Rossi's eyes. Maybe he hasn't just. He's just been debriefing, or. He hasn't quite disrobed properly yet. Sometimes it takes a while just to get your bearings when you've been sitting in a car for a wee while. Really beautiful sunset. Just enough cloud to make it interesting. Here is Simon Pagenaud, as predicted. And that will be at the end of his 20th lap. So that's pretty much spot on what the number six Acura has been doing. Just on 36, 37 minutes from pit stop to pit stop. And is that a first of a double for Pagenaud? Yeah, it was Montoya in before, wasn't it? Yeah, so presume here that Simon will stay in that car.
Yes, he will. He got in the car with 5 hours and 1 minute to go. So this will be a double for Simon Pagenaud. Fuel and tires and the wonderful windshield tear-off.
Ah.
The sun did officially set about 10 minutes ago now, I guess. There's still some lightness in the air, because there's not an awful lot of cloud cover, I don't think, Shay. Like I say, conditions now really, 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 really fun out there.
Another degree or two of temperature dropping from the track. Still 78% humidity. So still the air very, very thick. And the engines will like that. They'll really like it. The air is fat, as the old drag racing guys would have said. Third place for Harry Tinknell. Second and third for Mazda. Last time that the Multimatic run team will feed two cars, going down to one entry for next year, with Harry and Oli Plaar, the two substantive drivers. Yet to hear who the
Jarvis.
I said Oli Plaar, didn't I? Yes, I'm sorry. Thank you, Jeremy. Oli Jarvis and Harry Tinknell, the two Brits. Have we heard who the endurance drivers to be added to that is yet? Oh, it is Bomb. Jay Bomb, is it? Thank you, Shay.
Yep.
From stage left there. Thank you. still be a formidable driver pairing there, as third place car. Mazda of Harry Tinknell just elbows his way past Lawson Aschenbach, second in GT Daytona at turn number three there.
Doing a really good job is Lawson Aschenbach. He's set fastest lap in a couple of the last four races, I think, in GT Daytona. And that Riley Motorsports Mercedes car's quick. And he got past the number 63 car of Alessandro Balzan about 10 laps ago now, probably. And he's pulled away quite substantially over Balzan. He put 12 seconds between them. And is now only 5 seconds behind Patrick Long in the lead of the class in GT Daytona.
Jeremy Shaw is with me, John Heindorf, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Quick reminder that on the Haggerty community pages on Monday coming, 1 o'clock Eastern, that's 6 o'clock in the UK, another episode, or edition, should I say, of the 25th hour, the Haggerty 25th hour. Started this earlier on in the year. On the Monday after Le Mans, and had a stellar lineup. Alex Brundle and Zach Brown from United Autosport. David King, man who runs the Aston Martin racing programme. And Brendan Hartley literally arrived back home a few minutes before we got him on the air. Didn't even get a chance to say hello to his partner. Sat down and took us through what have been going on, including giving us a bit of an exclusive on the Toyota hypercar that he'd been sitting in. That car has been testing, by the way, in relative secret at locations in Europe. They've had a few little teaser images of the car. We've not seen anything substantive from that yet. Well, on Monday, we're back with a Haggerty 25th hour post Sebring and post the end of the WEC season, which ended earlier on today, or later on today in their time over in Bahrain at the circuit, the Sakhir circuit. 8-hour race to finish the season. And we'll have some guests for you from the various championships for an hour's worth of chat in sound and vision. And that is Monday, 1 o'clock Eastern. That's 6 o'clock Pacific, perfect for your lunch, 6 o'clock UK, perfect for your lunch break if you're on the Eastern time zone. Join us for that, and we'd like your questions as well. You can submit that via the video link, that'd be great. Just enough amount of cloud this evening to get a really interesting sunset over turn 17. Jeremy, you mentioned it's only, 10, 15 minutes since official sunset. But the parts of the track that aren't facing east are very dark already. But the view down from Ray Wenzel Jr., rooftop race camera at turn one, underneath the Mobil 1 bridge and down to 17, absolutely stunning tonight. Beautiful colours in the sky.
Yeah, it is cool, isn't it? It's just a great place. There's so much. I mean, in the heat of summer, it can't be hot. It's not, sometimes not a lot of fun with the heat and humidity down here, but it looks gorgeous. I mean, the pictures we have now are absolutely stunning, and it's so much fun to be driving a car at this time of the evening on a challenging track like this. And particularly there's some great competition all the way up and down the field. We're seeing some fast lap times. Tommy Milner has just turned the best lap in number four at Corvette. That's still five or six laps down after the problem they had earlier on, but still, you know, the car's running strongly, and most of the cars are. The race lead, lapping consistently in the 48s, is Tristan Vautier at the lead of this race, and the gap from first to second has gone out a little bit now. It was around about 7 to 8 seconds, been about 9 or 10 the last few, but again, not much change at all. The only real change is that Harry Tinknell is definitely slipping back in third position and coming under now increasing pressure from the wheeling Cadillac on which we ride right now.
And great to know that there are spectators at Sebring International Raceway as well, but nowhere near what we would have expected for the March race, and we all know why that can't happen. And hello particularly to Steph Neff, who's been there all weekend. I think was there on as early as Wednesday, and she's had a wander around to the back of the circuit, and she's tweeted at IMSA Radio and said, I've never been all the way around the back of the track, and it's wow. The cars sound like fireworks when they downshift. Fireworks for the soul, she says. Steph, that's mega. Glad you're enjoying it. Safe home in the Dodge on the way back. Thanks for your support as well for IMSA Radio, and indeed all of that audience wherever you are around the world or around the circuit. Great to know that you've enjoyed this season of IMSA. It has been a cracker, hasn't it? And we've added some very interesting events. How about that wet race at Charlotte for the GTs on the Charlotte Roval? I wasn't sure what we would get from that, but thoroughly enjoyed that. Jeremy and I really enjoyed talking about that one. And the other surprise for me, Jeremy, in some ways a surprise, the shorter races at both Daytona on July the 4th and then later in that month here at Sebring. We know the tracks, we know the kinds, what we expect in the longer races, but they actually work really well on the shorter formats as well, and I thoroughly enjoyed both of those races.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a strange season, but it's been a great season. All the races have been great. It ended up being a really, really good race at Charlotte, despite the weather.
Yeah.
And despite the sort of dire predictions about that track being, you know, like a street circuit kind of gone wrong, it raced really well.
I agree.
And it was a really exciting evening. A short race, but really, really good one. So, just again, hats off. We've talked about it several times already today, but hats off to IMSA for coming up with such a heavily revamped but very successful schedule for everybody involved.
There's something about, and I think it's IMSA and a number of other series have done it as well, necessity being the mother of invention. And never has that been more true than this year in 2020, in all kinds of walks of life, sport included and motorsport included. And I think for the greater part, motorsport's come out of this very well indeed, with, as I was saying, how it's responded originally to all of the issues of the pandemic, how it's helped out in the community, but also getting back to business and doing it in a way that has been safe. We heard Christina Nielsen talking about, you know, IMSA making sure that the drivers and teams were all well looked after and safe, and doing that in a safe and responsible way, and also coming up with some new tracks, some new formats, etc. It's been a real eye-opener for me this year, I'll be honest.
Yeah, everybody's worked so hard. John Doonan said it right. Just recently he had a sort of a State of the Union update which he sent out to people, and so many people have contributed to make this season not only possible but also successful as well. And we can't thank them enough for bringing, at least for us, some sense of normality to what has been a very abnormal year.
We've just had the leader into the pit lane, Mustang Sampling, Tristan Fortier. Shea Adam, our VP Racing Fuel pit reporter, has this.
He's only been on track for 38 minutes, so Tristan Fortier will be staying aboard the number 5 Mustang Sampling Cadillac. And it looks like fuel and tires for them, as well as a drinks bottle change for Tristan. Now, I did talk to a couple of drivers in about the last 30 minutes who have said, with the sun going down, the temperature is getting better. It was brutal earlier on in the day, but it's still not good yet. It's still not like normal Sebring, because this humidity and this temperature doesn't go away in Florida during the wet season. And normally we race here in the dry season. Yeah. And yes, Florida does not experience fall, spring, whatever you guys imagine as normal summers or as normal seasons. We only have the wet and the dry seasons. This is the first time the 12 hours has been held in the wet season.
Yeah, you have hot and hot and wet.
Yes, correct.
That's it. Hot and hotter and wetter. Yes, all right. Okay, Jeremy. It was a job for you in meteorology. There's no doubt about that at all. Yeah, still got that cloud over to the western side of the Sebring International Raceway. But as yet, we've had a few sprinkles, but nothing really to write home about. Certainly nothing that has affected the racing. In fact, I think... at the time, it was I think it was Simon Pagenaud, or maybe it was Sebastian Bourdais.
Yeah, it was.
It was Bourdais. He just got quicker when there was a few specks of rain about, which would have been getting onto the windshield of the car, no doubt. I didn't see any wipers going, but it didn't slow him down at all. In fact, he put his fastest lap of the race in.
He did, yeah. And then once the rain had, quote-unquote, rain had gone away, he went faster and faster again. He did three more best laps in that car over the course of the next 10 laps. I mean, that car's been absolutely flying, as we see number 55
from third
into the pits.
That's the Mazda. Harry Tinknell bringing that one in as Tristan Vautier leaves. And also in from the lead of GTD, this is significant, Wright Motorsports, Patrick Long with 9 minutes to go before the next tranche of points to be handed out in the Michelin Endurance Cup. So watch out for the 48 starting to climb up now as the people around them pitch. Yeah, Adam.
We've got the 16 of Wright Motorsport into the pit lane. Patrick Long and Jan Halen expected to take this car to the checkered flag. And also Andy Lally in for the Magnus Racing number 44. He and Spencer Pompelli will be handling the driving duties from here on out. Jan Halen took over from Patrick Long, so that was a driver change for the Wright Motorsport Porsche, as well as fuel and tires. Connor DiFilippi in from the lead of GCLM as well. This is the red BMW. I would be expecting Colton Herta to take over for a single here at this stage of the race, and then Bruno Spengler and then Connor DiFilippi to get back in to take it to the end. And also we've had Harry Tinknell in the 55 Mazda. Came in, got some fuel, got some new tires, and went back out.
He did, Shay, and that was a 21-lap stint from Harry Tinknell.
That's good.
So that might explain why he was kind of losing a little bit of ground to the number six car that he was kind of chasing on the road. Just, trying to get a bit better fuel consumption, take on a little bit less fuel at the pit stops or whatever it might be, but just building towards the end of the race. I think both Mazdas are looking strong. We didn't see, did we, the pace of the Mazdas through practice or qualifying?
No, not at
but,
all.
But they certainly seem to be right there in the thick of it during this race.
A significant event has occurred. The first spotting this year of the LED-lit palm trees on the infield. Say Phil has spotted it and nicked it. All is right with the world when that is true. I couldn't answer the question earlier on as to whether that group were here, but on one of the long shots, Phil over in the UK has spotted it, and it's just been retweeted on IMSA Radio. It's little things that just give a sense of normality about 2020 that you can say, yes, the guys with the illuminated palm trees have made it to Sebring. It just makes it all feel sort of right, doesn't it? 7 hours to go before we move into the last third of this race. Let's give you a quick update of what's been going on before we give you the rundown at the end of this hour here on WWOG 99.1 FM, Sirius 202, XM 217, and of course around the world on IMSA Radio, which is channel RS2, part of the Radio Show Limited network of audio and visual channels, and on IMSA.tv, where the sound and vision is perfectly married together for those of you watching outside of the US. If you're here and you want to, in the US and you want to watch, then it's NBCSN with Lee Diffie leading the commentary team. And good to see Brian Till and the rest of the guys working as well this weekend. They're all based up in Charlotte watching the TV pictures. And thanks to all of our TV colleagues as well down through this difficult season. Been passing information backwards and forwards. So just tell you that we've got the leading two cars into the pit lane, Tristan Yunus and Philippe Nasr, as they have come in. So you take those at the moment and then I'll do the update. Alrighty. And the resume of what's been going on.
We have no driver change down at Whelan Engineering. Felipe Nasr staying aboard for yet another stint. I would expect the same out of Tristan Nunez, who has only been in that Mazda for 42 minutes before he came into the pit lane. Fuel and tires for the Cadillac, and they are not adding any fluid this time around, so no panic, no cause for concern. The fuel is the last part of the stop that they're waiting on, and away goes Felipe Nasr, and I haven't yet, no, Mazda's already gone and clear. Tristan Nunez had a better stop with his 77 Mazda boys.
Wow, that's very interesting. Yeah. Very interesting.
Well, no, I mean, the 77 car came in significantly ahead of the number 31 car. It was about 17 seconds ahead before before they came into pits. The 31 car had been kind of trapped behind number 55.
Oh, yes, that's right, of course. That was the different Mazda. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay, understood. I've just seen the LED palm trees again. I'm a very happy person. Very happy indeed. We came into this weekend with the championship finally poised for the last race of the 2020 season here at the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring, presented by Advance Auto Parts. The number 7 Acura with a 2-point advantage over the number 10 crew in the Konica Minolta Cadillac, and 7 points further back the number 31 Cadillac crew from Whelan Engineering Racing. So, fairly simple set of calculations. It basically was who finished ahead of those three was going to be in the best position for the championship, but then you just had to make sure there was enough points between them to make sure that there was going to be no swapping around. Well, the first thing that went wrong with those calculations was that the number 7 Acura team Penske had a problem with an intercooler on the left hand side of the engine, which necessitated quite a big rebuild. Actually, the turbo had to come off. Guys were working really hard, and they dropped a little over 20 minutes, 11 laps. They've managed to make back remarkably four of those 11 laps in the race so far. They're still 7 laps off the lead in DPI and sit 8th in class. So then the advantage swung to the number 10 Konica Minolta team. Remember, they were just 2 points behind when they came in this weekend. And that was all going very nicely until out of turn 10, the Mazda, driven by Ollie Jarvis, dived down the inside of Scott Dixon and punctured the right rear tyre. The subsequent damage from the tyre flailing around did some quite significant damage underneath the wheel well and in front of the right rear wheel, including having to replace a radiator. Lucky the car didn't do more damage, and the car didn't overheat too badly. Those guys turned that car around so quickly. They only lost 5 laps, and they are still sitting 5 laps away from the lead. That gave the advantage, such as it was, to the number 31 Whelan Engineering Racing Cadillac. The red and white car always knew. They always knew that they had to win the race to be in with any chance, and then other people had to have wars. Well, that's how it was in the first half of the race, and they did get to the front of the field. They currently sit in fourth position with Felipe Nasr behind the wheel, and Pipo Durrani still to come. Those two drivers will take it to the end of the race. They are their most experienced and their quickest drivers in that car, and they've saved some time, so they will be able to go at the end. Even as it stands, nothing less than a win for that car will do. Right now, with the number 7 Alexander Rossi driven Acura sitting in 8th position in class, the number 10 Ryan Briscoe driven Cadillac from Konica Minolta in 7th, and the number 31 Felipe Nasr Whelan Cadillac in 4th, then by a point, the Acura team Penske number 7 will win the overall championship. We're about 90 seconds away from awarding more points in the Michelin Endurance Cup, which we'll give you the details of in the next hour of racing. But for now, it's Tristan Vautier that leads for Mustang Sampling. The number 5 car is 4 seconds ahead of the number 77 Mazda of Tristan Nunez, and then Simon Pagenaud is another 11 seconds further back. In GT Le Mans, Corvette, Porsche, BMW, BMW, Porsche, Corvette. The story in that class is that the number 4 has had its problems. The Corvette racing car dropped some fluid on the track, which caused a 4-car accident in the GTD category right at the front of the GTD field. The top 4 all involved in that, and the 2 Lexus both really being hobbled. One hasn't even come back to race. The other two cars involved were the Wright Motorsports Porsche and the number 30 team Hardpoint Audi. Those two cars at the moment running 6th and 7th in the GTD. As it stands at the moment, Scuderia Corsa lead with Alessandro Balzan leading for Ferrari in the middle of a pit stop cycle at the moment that will see, I think, Brian Sellers in the Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini cycle through to, at worst, third position. But no, I think it's going to be second position when they come around when the other teams pit. And that should be enough to give them the win in the Michelin Endurance Cup in GTD. That's how it stands as we move into the last quarter of the race. There's 4 hours to go at the 60th annual Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring, and the next hour of racing starts right now.